So much of the meditative life feels passive, in that it's about being totally still, and it appears when you're sitting in a meditative space that one does nothing. But the meditative life does not end when you get up. Julia, please sit up. Rudy used to say, when you walk down the street and there is a bottle cap or a piece of paper or wrapper of some kind, and it's in front of you, pick it up. It's yours. If it's in front of you, it's yours. That's a really important understanding. What's in front of you every day partly is what you put there, what you choose to have there. Do you read the newspaper in the morning? Do you read a comic book? Do you stare off in space? Do you turn on the TV? Do you drive to work on this street as opposed to that street? Are there people greeting you in the morning, sitting up, talking to you? What's there? What's in front of you? And for so many people, the thing that's in front of them isn't what they want to have there. There is something somewhere in your mind, in your being, that's saying it should be other. I wish it was other. Why do I have to go to work again? Why do I have to go to the same job? Why do I have these people in my life? Why are these all these bothers there? Well, two choices. Do something about it, change it, quit the job, do something else, or say yes to it. If you say yes to it, it's your job to make it the best version of what it is. Whatever that may be, if it's in front of you, it's yours. Use it. Make it something that works, or change it. But don't spend your life complaining about what's there. Don't spend your life hating the choices that have been made, or that you yourself have made, or the situations you were born into. Because sometimes you're born into situations that are less than what you would want. What we celebrate in life is people who take difficult situations and make them better. What is better? What is making something better? Well, it's something that makes you happier, that makes you feel more at ease, more available to the universe. The heater. And we're making a choice to turn it off so that the talk can be heard. Thank you. Perfect example, actually, perfect teaching. It turned itself on. It was programmed to turn itself on. But it was inopportune. It did not fit the circumstances. And so we turned it off. That is action at work. That is making a decision in life to turn something around. You can do that all the time. You can make things different. If you make yourself happy or content with the situation, life will flow for you more easily. If you're in circumstances that you cannot turn around, that you cannot change, that are there because of your karmic reality, well, be miserable, complain, why me, God? Or go, thy will be done, and you find a way into action that is an acceptance of what you were born into, or an acceptance of the situation that arose, so that you can live in the moment and not be angry at the moment. If you're angry at the moment, then something isn't right. If you can accept your anger and accept that it is a valid response to what's happening, if it is an unchangeable situation and you are angry at it, there is a reaction to it, by accepting the reality of it, by accepting the fact of it, your anger and your hostility shift. And what happens is you begin to become aware of the person or the aspect of the person that is reacting. Learning about the parts of yourself that get angry, that feel somehow abused by life, somehow not recognized by life. Looking at these things in you that are not working, in a sense, is the gift of the obstacle itself. The thing that brought you discomfort is showing you the part of you that becomes uncomfortable. If you will, in Rudy's terms, the thing that needs to be worked on. Here is the problem. The problem isn't the thing that's happening. The problem is your reaction to the thing that's happening. So you need to take action to overcome the reaction. You need to find a way to, in a sense, take the lesson and let it enter you, let it expose you to yourself. See the part of you that gets angry, that gets unsettled, that gets annoyed. See it for all of its clarity, and then go, okay. That is beginning to know who you are. Beginning to know the parameters of your own life. Starting to see how you function. Some people function in a very narrow cage. Everything rattles it. And it's a miserable space to live in. Because every little thing that goes wrong is just awful and miserable and annoys them, and they want to get out of the cage. Until you die, and maybe not even then, you are not out of the cage. You are simply in a rattle zone. And you have to live with it. Or not. The or not is taking a breath, if you will, expanding the zone, expanding the walls of who you are, relaxing and knowing, I do not have to react to that discomfort. I do not have to react to that experience. And you just let go. And this time, when the ping starts to hit the wall of the cage, it doesn't hit. The cage is, it's much bigger. It starts to go to the cage and it falls over. You have created a space in which this thing can rattle around, but it doesn't hit anything. It's just there. And its only reason to be is it wants to make noise. It wants to rattle the cage. And once it's not rattling the cage, this disturbance, this annoyance, this frustration just falls to the wayside. It will be so frustrated by not making a noise, by not getting addressed, not being heard. It will just kind of implode because it's not nurtured. It's not fed. It's not made to be a part of your structure, of who you are. So many of us want to be miserable. We want to be miserable because the misery defines us. The misery is the known. The misery is everyone else's fault. The misery is the cage reinforced by you and by everyone outside you. And so you have a complete understanding of the parameters of your being, and as much as you hate it, you know the definition of you. Take a breath. Let those frustrations fall away. Let the walls expand. And the definition of you changes. Who you are becomes different. Who you are becomes non-reactive to the very thing that you think is defining you. And when that starts to happen, the question comes up, who are you? Who are you? And the answer that starts to appear very quietly is the thing that reacts. I am that which reacts. I am that which gets angry, that gets frustrated, that gets disturbed. And if I can expand the parameters of that enough, then I am not that. And you start to have this awareness that you are the space in which these annoyances occur, but with no one there to react to them, you're just the space. You're just the space. And that space is actually relatively calm. There are times where the reaction is important. If you have a child that's being hurt, you will react. If people you care about are being hurt, you will react. You're not going to just go and let it go, because that would be deeply unnatural. There are things that bring up reaction that are really essential to the definition of your being. So, if you're going to react, there is something called right action, and there's something called, I would just call it, reaction. Reaction is unconsidered, unthought, unmotivated, disturbed response. Right action is taking care of business. If stuff is going on in your life that needs to be addressed, either in the microsecond of that moment or in the larger scheme of things, if things need to be addressed, right action. Right action is not action essentially for a result. It's certainly not there for you to be praised by somebody or acknowledged by somebody or said, "Wow, that was a good thing you just did," or "you're a good guy," or it has nothing to do with that. Right action is picking up the bottle that's on the street and throwing it in the garbage. Nobody sees you. Nobody. Nobody's around to tell you, boy, you're really considerate. You know, you're doing the right thing. You're a good person. Nobody. But you pick it up and you do the right thing. Something in you will have a resonance to that, that will feel what we call good, harmonic, balanced. You are part of the whole. On the other hand, let's say you're driving, down the street, you just finished your bottle of Coke, and you open the window and toss it on the street for somebody else to pick up, or the garbage collector, or whoever will do it. That's wrong action. It's wrong action because you're giving somebody else your work to do. Karma implies that if you do that, you will get back all that and more. That sometime you'll have to pick up 30 or 50 bottles off of streets to overcome the one you threw out the window. I don't know that for a fact, but I will tell you that's my sense of it. My dad would also ask me to mow the lawn. I talk about this a lot because I was so bad. I said, no, I don't want to mow the lawn. He said, I need you to mow the lawn. I said, well, I don't want to do it. I said, you do it. If you really care that much, you do it. And he did it. He would go out and mow the lawn. And I felt, huh, I got away with it. I didn't have to mow the lawn. When Rudy bought these buildings in New York City, the amount of work Blanche and I did on these buildings was so unbelievable. Day after day, I'd come home from work and go to work at Rudy's. And I would, you know, rip off ceilings and put up plasterboard and stuff I never thought I could do, ever. And I did it, and I finally understood, this is for not mowing the lawn. This is your payback. You have to do the thing that's in front of you that allows for and paves the way for a simple, easy life. Not easy, it's the wrong word, but satisfying, fulfilling. If you have something in front of you and you don't do it, it will rattle your cage somewhere along the way. You will feel disturbed. You'll wonder, why doesn't somebody else do it? Why don't other people step in and take care of these things? And the reality is, when you're a child, your mother and father will step in and they'll take care of it. A good mother and father will begin to direct you to do some of that work so that you learn responsibility and possibility of taking care of yourself and your own job. Bad parents create an expectation in the child that they will always have somebody there taking care of them. And the problem for that is the parents end up with children who are ungovernable and hard to be with, even as adults. And the child ends up angry at the parent for never giving them borders or definitions or things that made them understand their responsibilities in the world, and everybody's in a loss-loss situation. Knowing the boundaries, working within them, satisfying the demand, allows you to have the life you need. And the more you become non-reactive to things and just do the right thing, the more life plays out in a way that makes you feel this was worth it. This was worth the ride. We're all on very, very big, mysterious ride, all of us. This idea of meditation is simply a way to get something that has to do with maybe the rule book that our parents didn't give us because their parents didn't give it to them. One of Rudy's first rules in his book was make your bed every morning. Spiritual life starts with making your bed in the morning. Well, I mean, I took that to heart. I continue to make my bed materially and figuratively every day. We all have that to do. When you understand that life is an opportunity to do the right thing, you end up with a life in which you have performed well. The life of frustration, anger, hostility, reactiveness to the endless obstacles that will come up is a life that's no good for anybody. And I wish I could say I didn't know so many people who were reactive. But most people I know are reactive. And most people I know curse the situation, they curse other people, they curse the world around them, and they feel somehow they've been denied or they've been betrayed, and there is unbearable frustration. And all I want to tell them is, do the right thing. Take a breath, slow down. Take responsibility. Don't build this into something bigger than it is. Just these simple phrases. Don't do that stuff. But people don't hear it. They don't want to hear it. They don't want you to tell them. And so you have to kind of shut up and watch the way the world works and how karma unfolds for people and how painful it is and how difficult it is. And your heart will go out to them on one level, but another level it will go, that's how it works. I mean, you may feel badly, but that's the way it works. And when you leave the world like that, when you've had 60, 70, 80 years of this kind of activity, this kind of life building, your life is like a really bad story, a really bad melodramatic story. And I've said this before, but I mean it. It has no conclusion. They just cancel it. Nobody's watching anymore. Nobody cares. Nobody, you wake up the next day, it's not on. That's the end of a really wasted life. The life you have right now is more important than that. Don't waste your time. There is much to be done. There is a lot in front of you. Open your eyes. They're dropping a lot of bottles on the street. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff that needs attention. You can do as much as you want. You're not responsible for the whole world. You're responsible for what's in front of you. But what's really kind of interesting at this moment in time is how much the whole world is coming to your doorstep. There are historically times like that. They're called times that try men's souls. And when they arrive, you can rattle around reactively in your cage, yelling and crying and screaming and, you know, how terrible it all is. Or you can do something. Do the right thing. What is that? Nobody's here to dictate that to you. What is it for you that wants to do something to respond to what's in front of you? What do you want to do? Again, don't let somebody like me tell you. You're the one that has to figure it out. You're the one who can go not looking, not looking, not looking, not looking, not looking. Or you can look and go, oh God, and then pretend it's not there or wish it wasn't. Or you can go, what can I do here? What can I do? And it's interesting, when the times that try men's souls arrive in your doorstep, sometimes people just move away from that doorstep. They go elsewhere. Get out of the country, get out of town, get out of Dodge. Find a place you can go to where there is safety, safe zones, comfort zones, where you'll be fine to continue your particular kind of life. But what happens when there is nowhere to go? When there is no safe zone left? Then what? Where do you go? What do you do? Where there's nowhere to disappear to, there's nowhere to protect yourself or your family or the people you love. What do you do? I can't give you answers exactly, but I can tell you to ask yourself those questions. It may have something to do with non-reactivity, but right action. It may have something to do with love. It may have something to do with compassion. It may have something to do with community. So the real question is, at what point do you say something is at your door? Are you waiting for people to be battering your door down? Some people will do that. But when the world is in the upheaval I was talking about in this morning's talk, you are facing stuff that will try your soul. So the great thing about a meditative stillness, about the opportunity to go within and get clarity, the opportunity to go within and get direction, and the feeling for something, I need to do something, just saying that, I need to do something, I don't know what it is, but I need to do something. Help me. Help guide me in the right direction. Help me find my way in this strangeness that I'm now experiencing. That's the beginning. How do I find my way? How do I find my way for my family, for my friends, for my parents, for my children? How do I find my way? Ask. Ask inside. Go within yourself and seek an answer. And get quiet enough that when the answers start to come, you don't react. You just listen. You just observe. And when the right answer comes, those of you who are creative beings, you know when the right answer comes. The right color comes for that part of the painting. The right word comes for the story you're writing. The right scene emerges. You know it. It's just like, ah, the answer. Answers arrive. And they arrive from, I can't describe it. I've never known exactly what it is, but the creative process introduces you to something we can quite lovingly and quietly call the Creator. Creation is something you are part of. When you are in the creation and you are part of creation, you are creating. When you are creating, you are experiencing a connection to that which inspires and allows for and dictates at times the creative effort. How do I respond creatively and rightly with right action to what's in front of me? I don't like to always go back to my own personal story, but those of you who know the story know that 4 months ago or so I got really upset by the taking of children from their parents at the border, and I decided I needed to do something. I didn't know what to do. I just started talking about, what can I do? What can I as a person in the world do about this? And again, I think you've all heard this, those of you who listen to my talks, but the thing that came to me was, I know how to make a movie, so I would make a movie about the unseen event, the actual separation of a mother and a child at the border. What does that look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? How are people to know what any of this is without actually visualizing it, which not everybody's good at? So I just started out reaching for what was right in front of me, which, my housekeeper. I said, have you ever acted before? No. Do you want to be in a movie? No. Well, okay. She said, okay. And in the end, she's not starring in the movie because I realized I needed someone who knew how to act. But she provided us with her uncle who ran a church, who provided a church for us with all of the extras in the show, an actual place to shoot the movie. What I'm trying to get at is everything unfolded, one thing after another, and we actually made these films. And the films are beautiful. I've sent a link to all of you, I believe, to look at them if you want to see them. They're just, one is 1 minute long, 2 30-seconds and 1 15-second, and they're in English and Spanish. And they are an effort to expose people to an experience of what it means to seek help, freedom, escape danger, protect your child, and then have that child ripped away for reasons that are political and nothing else. You feel what that is, and the lesson of it was simply vote. Just vote. The dissemination of these materials, of these videos, was something I knew nothing about, and to this moment, unfortunately, know nothing about. So getting them seen has proven to be really difficult. We have had enormous access to certain politicians, but they have not returned that interest. you don't even know if they looked at them. A number of Hollywood celebrities have signed on board and put them on their Twitter accounts, like Zoe Saldana and Margaret Cho and others. The lesson I've had in this is, you don't do this for the result, you do it for right action. The feeling of doing the right thing means I can live within the confines of my psyche, knowing that as much as I was horrified by an outside event that was right in front of me, I did something that felt right. That's all I can tell you. I don't know that I changed a mind. I don't know if I changed a vote. I don't know what the result will be. I may never know. I may never know. I say the same thing about movies. I may have said them on these talks, but when I made movies, I never knew who would be affected by them, ever. Until somewhere 20 years later, 25 years later, someone says, you know, I was watching your movie and I proposed to my wife that night. You inspired me. Well, who knew? Who knew? That stuff happens. Stuff happens because you did the right thing. You did what you needed to do. You participated in the creation by becoming one with the Creator and making, doing, acting in a creative way that was helpful to the world in some way. Helpful to your family, helpful to you. And they in many ways line up. If you help the world, you help your family, you help yourself, there's a whole room full of people who are all benefited. So what I'm trying to push for here is that you do not think of your meditative spiritual life as a hiding place, as a way of escaping from the demands of the world, but that you take it as a place in which you can arrive at the inspiration and the creative choice to do something in the world that will be called the right thing. Do the right thing and live that way. And if you live that way, the extraordinary adventure of human life, of humanity itself, is that this living, breathing organism called mankind is served and benefited by the fact that you were part of it, that you showed up, that you did what you had to do. You were not just a leech. You were not just somebody who took advantage of being here. You were not somebody who harmed other people for your own benefit. You were part of the, call it the solution. You were part of the totality, and you did what you needed to do. And I will tell you, when you meditate and when you rise up into the totality of your being, that rightness of action, that rightness of being will be known. It will be known in the same way that wrongness is known. And it's known by you. It's known by you. So be, do right. Be the right thing, do the right thing. Serve yourself, your environment, your family, your community, your tribe, the world that you're in. Serve the total, and you will find yourself being profoundly fulfilled. And whatever happens, you did it the way it was meant to be done. It's an extraordinary journey, and you will all benefit from it if you use this meditative life to stop reacting and act rightly. The reward of it is the action itself. Any questions?
Part of the craziness in life is just how we react to everything. And we create more and more drama in our lives as we react.
Well, I gave a talk last week in San Rafael about being played. That we're being played by outside events, news media, and probably everything. Everything plays us to become people who react in certain ways that make us, give us headaches and have to buy Tylenol, that make us want to eat food that gets us sick, that serves the industry that creates health medications. I mean, everything seems to be manipulating us. And thank you again. And our reaction to it keeps us in the thrall of that which needs reaction. The reaction machine, which is human life mostly, people, societal life.
Right, I mean, on a grand scale, but in our own little myopic world where you walk into the kitchen and your roommate, spouse, whatever, sees the dishes all piled up and he or she goes off, it's like, you never wash the dishes, and then it turns into, you leave your clothes out all the time, if you just say nothing. And they walk out of the room, they still own it, and you go on with your day. As soon as you engage that situation, then you own it, and now you're carrying around all that crap for the rest of the day.
Right. I mean, well, the key is wash the dishes.
You wash them.
The way it works, honestly, if you walk into the kitchen and there are dishes, they're yours.
Right.
Once you understand that, they get washed.
And it's easier.
And as soon as you make it somebody else's job, for whatever reason, well, you're the one today and you're supposed to just do it. If it's in front of you, it's yours, life changes. It truly does. And the other person may appreciate it or not appreciate it, but you may at one point discover that they did the dishes for you. And you go, that's how life can be. People being kind and considerate to each other.
Right, the dishes being a metaphor.
Yes, absolutely. Important. Anyone else?
That's the advantage of living alone. Everything is yours. It just dawned on me, I guess about 4 or 5 months ago, I walked in the kitchen one morning and I was like, oh my God. And then I just kind of looked around and I went, you don't put stuff away. It was like, that's why it's a mess. Mm. And it's really not dirty. It's just, I take it out, da-da-ba-doom, leave it. Next thing. And that's...
Well, and there's two ways to react to that. One is, I'm a slob and I don't care.
No, I'm not.
Or it's like, I got to make a change here. One or the other. I have a good friend who's...
I actually like just going there and putting everything away.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. No, there's something really nice about cleaning up after yourself on occasion. But there are people who don't mind being a slob, and that's their lifestyle, and you just go, okay, if you can find your contentment in it, that's fine. But in the end, you're living in your dirt.
No.
Some people
but
like that.
But it's just saying, living alone, you really do have to accept it's all yours.
There's pluses and minuses on both sides.
Absolutely.
Phil?
I was just going to comment, what we model to others really matters. Like if you wash the dishes, you're modeling that to your household. You know, and then eventually people start doing that. They start to see that as standard. And if you're modeling it with vibrance, you know, and positivity, then it's going to feel like a good action. Like my mother could get me to do anything just because she's like, oh, let's do this, you know. Huh. If somebody else does something and they're grumpy about it, you're like, I ain't doing that.
I mean, it comes down to that level of simplicity.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are looking for spiritual lives that transcend and do all this stuff, and they can't handle the dishes. What good is that? You know, they're great meditators, and they're purer than anything you can see, but they're horrible with other people. That is not the way to go. And at this moment in time, the more kindness and the more goodness we can provide for one another, the better. That's serving community, it's serving yourself, it's serving everything. And I really put that out there now because I'm seeing the noise factor in life creating such disruption in so many people and so many individuals, and I do know that it can be counteracted by simple acts of kindness.
They just made me think of the New York subway and everybody on their phones. You know, that's just so disturbing. You see, like, they don't notice the pregnant woman or the old lady or, I don't know, but it's a seat and it's quite disturbing.
I mean, if you want to see stuff to be disturbing, you just have to walk down the street, almost anywhere. And then what? And then you have to figure out, what do I do? I mean, there's secret little things you can do, but most people don't know how to do it. You can actually send love and energy and compassion into people walking by you, walking in front of you. You can just give something worthy. It's a feeling, it's an emotion, and you can express it to them. They may not know they got it, but maybe that night at home, something will be just a tiny bit different. But you will feel you did the right thing. You can really do that. And in New York City, you have a great opportunity to do it over and over and over and over. Just spread this calm serenity that you are and let it ripple out. But if you're reacting to it, if you're getting angry on the subway, you're just part of the noise.
Oh no, I try to smile.
Yeah, good.
Especially grumpy people, and then you're surprised sometimes they smile at you. And I
absolutely
think, oh, this person is really angry. And I just think, okay, I'm going to open my heart and just try to smile and get them smiling sometimes.
Yeah, no, it really works. It really does work.
Yeah, it does.
Anyone else?
So I used to be really messy, and I had I've had this story, you know, like about myself, that's part of who I am or whatever. And I'm house sitting for a really big house in Westchester, and the person who is like the backup person for where I'm, you know, so I could come here, he came this morning, we were talking, and he said, I told the owner that I've never seen her house so clean as, like, meaning me. I'm the one that did that. And I can let go of that story, that the messiness and then the shame and the cycle and what that means. And without that story, it's like a whole different life.
Yeah, different you.
Yeah, and, you know, when I was in Hawaii, I let go of a lot. And I worked in a commercial kitchen at the community 4 days a week. And I worked harder in a way than I ever have. And I've lived by myself for a long time, but living with other people and hundreds of other people, it really was, if I don't do it, someone else is going to have to pick this up. And it was
yeah.
a personal experience
yeah.
that I'm just kind of seeing in a new way with you talking.
That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, this was at the center of Rudy's teaching. It's so many of us, we're trying to become something else, but that something else didn't have to do with being better versions of ourselves. It was like being something altogether different. You know, getting, again, to you trying to walk around as a spiritual being, smiling at everybody, and, you know, causing misery to everyone you knew. That's not it. That's not it. The it is do what's in front of you.
So, Bruce, 2 years ago I was transferred from one school to another school, and it was a very traumatic experience. And part of how I got right with it was that the school that I was transferred to needed me. And I had a great year last year. And this year I've noticed that I may be taking on more than just what's in front of me, because I feel like... And last year I did this, but now it's my second year there. I can step back, but like I plowed through, like I was a force to be reckoned with. And what I would like to practice this year is still inspiring change, but not taking it on so head on and like having to like bulldoze my way through it.
I think that speaks for itself. Yeah, I mean, there are people who, I mean, doing the right thing does not mean doing everything. And doing for everything for everybody else who has a need as well to do the right thing. So by robbing other people of that opportunity, you get in the way of their life and you make your life ungovernable often. So I think what you're saying is really important. You know, do the right thing, but know the boundaries of what that is. You can't go beyond what you can do. And if you try to go beyond what you can do, you will create tensions and drama that will create more problems and will not make the world a better place. So what you're saying is brilliant, I think, and I know, because I know you, that that really is true, that you have learned that lesson, and that lesson is a beautiful one to communicate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't mean that to be, that's not the actual message, you know? It's not like your job is to walk around smiling, you know? Under certain circumstances, that will be a good, right thing to do, but certainly to walk around that way all the time is kind of weird and problematic. There are oppressors out there. There are obstacles out there. There are things that make life really difficult. And we are now arriving at a place in time where our own private oppressors are no longer as much an issue, or maybe only part of an issue of larger oppressors happening all around us. That the society is becoming oppressive, that the things that are going on are oppressive culturally in the world. Things are oppressive in major ways. What can you do? You can hunker down, buy a house somewhere else, go underground, don't go outside. I mean, there's a million things you can do, but perhaps a better one is, I want to be of help. I want to find a way not to be simply under the thumb of oppression. What can I do? It doesn't have to be grand and heroic. It doesn't have to be start a revolution unless you're called upon. What it is asking for help to rise to the occasion and find a way either to help people who are also oppressed, hold hands, gather together, create a Sunday brunch or a Saturday night gathering and have people just sit together and play cards and have a good night. I mean, it's whatever arrives for you that makes you, breaks you out of the shell of feeling oppressed and allows you to take control of your own human life. That's what's important. Figure out, what can I do? And you can start out by just saying, what can I do? Help me, help me. And then stay available to what starts to form. Something will start to be directive. You will hear voices. They will be silent, still voices that will tell you what to do in the same way that an artist has a blank canvas and just picks a brush and does one stroke, and then something starts to happen. Make that stroke. Try to go out there. Do something. Just stand on the corner and say, what can I do now that would make any human being happier? I don't know. I mean, it can get kind of weird out there on that level, but that may be better than sitting in your home thinking I'm oppressed. Not that that's what you're doing, but that is what many people do. They just get into the smallness of their cage and rattle around until the cage is buried in the ground. So don't do that if you can help it. And coming here today was smart, because at least you're hearing someone give you an option. May not be the right option or the option, but it's an option. And the fact that you asked the question is meaningful.
And I just want to thank you because you introduced yourself to me. And that's like getting out of a cage. I mean, I was very impressed by that, so I'm not impressed.
See, but it's as simple as that. It's as simple as acts of kindness. And nobody knows how far their acts of kindness go. But when you come out and say to somebody, thank you for that, and make it a public statement, everyone here has learned a lesson. It's valuable. And, you know, we're here for very grand things, to transcend materialized space and time. But that'll be much easier to do if you use space and time well. George?
It just seems that in our society today, we're all being besieged by people pursuing us or asking us to do things, and so we withdraw from people. And it's much better to be open to.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but if your mailbox is full of like 500 requests for money, and then you give money, and then there were 1,000 more requests that come out from the same people you just gave money to, you go, what's the value of doing this? So what I do is I give to somebody, and then I make a junk mail after that. So I don't have to get 500 more responses from the same people, because I know that's exactly what they're going to do. Do the right thing, but measure it. Know that you cannot be constantly in the cage, that they're going to keep rattling, saying, we need more help, we need more help, we need more help. No, I did my help. And that's all you have to do. You did it. You'll feel right inside. You won't feel wrong. If they can make you guilty by coming in 400 times, if people asking you over and over to do stuff, no, you can't do that much.
But they almost make you close off.
Many people...
You're besieged.
Yes. Many people are oppressed and besieged right now. And it's only going to get worse. So you have to figure out what are your barriers and how do you find joy and life and vibrancy and community in the midst of so much heavy, oppressive energy. What do? You don't want to roll up and die. You don't. You want to find the thing that will give you life and joy. You know, you have your granddaughter. There's all these little things that can spark life and joy in you. Gravitate toward those things and just draw the line.
So it's not the acts of kindness, it's not the stand for humanity, it's not the being the being that wants to provide the love and compassion and healing. I struggle with when people won't listen. And they're crying for help, they're suffering, they're hurting, you know, and they want something to change.
Well, Brian, I've been teaching for 50 years almost, and that's mostly what I come across. You just keep talking, keep sharing. You keep sharing. You just keep at it. The ones who need to hear, and it may only be one or two. But you know, Buddha said, I've heard this. I don't know if this is true. He said, 2 in a million. If 2 in a million hear you, you've done good work. So, yeah. So who am I to? I don't know who the two will be, you know. But I actually think there's a fair number in this room who've actually heard. I really do, and that's kind of amazing. And if at last, and they take it out there into the world and have one momentary impact, that's an impact that might not have happened. So that's kind of how you have to look at it. You can't walk around and and think you've saved a million lives. All you can do is your right thing for other people. Your right thing, as best you can. And don't try to ram it down their throats, and don't try to walk around saying, well, they're not hearing me, and it's why they're gonna, and I'm so miserable because they don't hear me. I don't care if you don't hear me. I mean, I do, but I don't. You don't hear me? Onward. Maybe somebody will.
Sometimes it's like when you read a book when you're 12, you don't get it, but when you're 40, you all of a sudden, hey, that's great.
That's exactly what it is. It's why you have to keep saying the same thing over and over.
It's like secret Tibetan things that have been stuck away, and then they come out in the world when they're ready.
Absolutely. But we are, there's nothing new under the sun. There really is nothing new. Everything I'm saying has been said for millennia by people who have traveled the road to wherever it is we're all going. and they're a few steps ahead of us, and they wrote it down, and now we're a few steps ahead of others, and we can share what we know. And in the end, we're all working our way into the mystery, basically. But working your way into the mystery can be made a sweeter journey or a more sour journey, depending upon how you choose to live it. All I'm trying to do is help you live it a little bit happier.
Well, I think you do a good job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?